Jesus was a storyteller. We all know that. He told stories in a time when there was no internet, there was no television, there was no radio. A storyteller then, a good storyteller, was like a television celebrity, a movie star, a rock god. Now we have the stories of Jesus coming down to us through the Bible. But those are stories that were told and retold and told by people who had heard them told, and details drift away. There's even a story in the Bible where a woman is told, because of what you have done, your name will never be forgotten. And guess what? Her name is not there, and we don't know it. Jesus, when he was asked questions, what is the kingdom of God like? He told a story to illustrate. When he was asked, who is my neighbor? He told a story to illustrate, a parable, the parable of the Good Samaritan. Now, if I ask you what a parable was, you would say, oh, it's a story that Jesus told. But the origins and the meaning of the word parable is actually to lay something beside something else. Jesus laid stories beside something else. What we're left with now are the basic framework of the stories. When Derek asked me a couple of weeks ago, would I be willing to fill the pulpit time this morning? I said, yes, but I'd like to tell a story. I would like to tell a story that I can lay beside 1 Corinthians 13, the love chapter. In 1952, my dad graduated from Stout State University in Menominee, Wisconsin, with a teaching certificate. In 1952, in the fall, he started teaching at Lake Zurich High School. And as they do to all beginning teachers, they gave him extra things to do. He was the freshman class sponsor. 4 years later, in the summer of 1956, after 3 years of fundraising, that class, which would now be seniors, was ready to go on their class trip. They were going to take the train, leave early Monday morning, take the train all the way to Washington, D.C., and spend a week there. My mom and dad were going as sponsors, which created three problems. Myself, my older sister Janice, and my oldest sister Judy. What to do with us? Well, it was simple. You don't hire a babysitter for that. Why should I put my kids with a stranger? We have relatives. So plans were made. Janice would stay in Milwaukee with my Aunt Mavis. She had twin daughters, Paula and Susan, that were about Jan's age. Judy would stay in Neenah, Wisconsin, with my Aunt Gladys and Uncle Ken, and they had a daughter, Karen, that was about her age, but what to do with me? And they decided that I would spend the week with my grandparents in Oconto Falls, Wisconsin, and I looked forward to it. Grandma had these canned peas, jars, rows of them down in her basement. I loved those canned peas. She'd mix them with cream. She'd put them with carrots. I loved those peas. I was sure I could have those peas at every meal if I wanted to. She made pie crust cookies. And oh, they were so good, and the cookie jar never got empty. And then I would have my grandfather all to myself. Now, whenever we went up to my grandparents in Ocana Falls, my sisters were along, there were cousins there. I had to share my grandfather with them. But this would be my week with my grandfather all to myself, and I couldn't wait. Saturday morning, the 1947 Plymouth flathead, three-speed on the column, was all loaded up. The family was getting ready to go out to it, and my father said to me, "Come here, I want to show you something." And he went to the phone, put his finger in the zero, went around, it went clickety-clickety-click, and a voice said, "Operator." My father said, "Yes, I would like to place a long-distance, person-to-person call to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Crestview 5-5918. I would like to place a call to Lawrence Musio." And she said, "Who is calling, please?" He said, "Larry Temple." I said, "Dad, Dad." She said, "One moment, please." I said, "Dad, Dad." He put his hand over the receiver. I said, "Dad, there is no Lawrence Musio at that address, at that telephone number." He said, "I know that, and you know that, but she doesn't know that." We heard her click as she plugged in the different trunks and long-distance trunks. Pretty soon, we heard the phone ring. The phone was answered. I recognized the voice of my cousin Paula immediately. The operator said, "I have a long-distance person-to-person call at this number for Lawrence Musio from Larry Temple." My cousin Paula said, "Mom, Uncle Lawrence is about ready to start out. He'll be here in a couple hours." And I could hear my aunt Mavis say, "Give me that phone." And I thought, he knows, and I know, and now she knows. My Aunt Mavis got on the phone. "Can I help you?" The operator said, "Yes." Her voice was about 20 degrees colder now. She said, "I have a long-distance telephone call, person-to-person, to Lawrence Musio at this number." My Aunt Mavis said, "Oh, I'm sorry. Lawrence just stepped out to the grocery store. He won't be back for another hour." And I thought, wow, my Aunt Mavis is a good liar. The operator said, "Thank you." She turned to us and said, "Lawrence Musio is not available right now." And I thought, the jig is up. She knows. And she's going to call the police. We hung up the phone. We got in the 1947 Plymouth. We started out to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. It was about a two-hour drive. And I was so nervous and looking for police the whole way that I forgot to play my favorite traveling game, which was torment your older sisters. When we got to Milwaukee, we headed for Aunt Mavis's house. Now, you have to understand, Aunt Mavis was the black sheep of the family. My grandmother and grandfather were staunch Methodists. And Aunt Mavis had fallen in love with Peter Musio. Uncle Pete was Italian. He was Catholic. Uncle Pete smoked and was known to have wine in the house on holidays. We got to Aunt Mavis's, and it was about noon. She'd set out some sandwich meat and so forth. I loved to eat at Aunt Mavis's because she had these new inventions called TV trays. There wasn't enough room at the table for everybody, so we got to eat on TV trays. We got done eating. There was time to visit. And as always happened, the adults sat down to talk, and us kids went out in the backyard to play. Now, Paula and Susan were my sister's age, Jan's age. They were twins. They were big city girls. And cousin Paula was known as the wild one. She was fearless. We went out in the backyard, we played for a little bit, and then she unbuttoned the front of her dress, and she showed me something I had never seen before in my life. Her belly button was an Audi. I had never seen an Audi belly button. All of ours were innies. We got to checking. Susan also had an Audi for a belly button. This was amazing. This was interesting. We went inside and we checked baby Marilyn, and she had an Audi for a belly button too. What could this mean? Well, about that time, we were ready to go. My dad said, one more thing to do. He motioned me over to the phone, put his finger in the zero, around, clickety, clickety, click, and the same woman answered. Operator. My dad said, I would like to place a long-distance person-to-person call to Lawrence Bunn at Lakeside 37477. I said, she's not going to fall for this again. But she did. She called, the phone rang. I heard my Aunt Gladys's voice. The operator said, long distance person-to-person call to Lawrence Bunn at this number. Aunt Gladys said, I'm sorry. Lawrence Bunn has gone fishing for the weekend and he won't be back till tomorrow evening. And I thought, wow, my Aunt Gladys is a better liar than my Aunt Mavis. We got in the car. We drove up to Aunt Gladys's. It was only about an hour and a half to Nina. Again, the adults talked, and us kids played. Now, my sister Judy was in about the seventh grade, and she loved to play school. Karen was her co-teacher, and my poor cousin Kenny and I were the students. We had spelling. We learned seventh grade spelling. We learned to sound out, and I didn't know this at the time, but we were learning far ahead of the curve that we were supposed to learn. We were learning to sound out words with letters. We were learning all these things that were far advanced because they were teaching us. They were tutors. Well, finally, it was time to go. My mother and my father and I got into the car, and we started driving to Ocana Falls, and my mother started coaching me. She said, remember, children should be seen and not heard. And then she turned to my dad and said, but, you know, if all you do is see them and you don't hear them, how do you know what they're thinking? She said, now, also remember not to tell them that I am pregnant. I said, why not? She said, because I'm not. She said, don't do anything to upset Aunt Maud. I knew who Aunt Maud was. Aunt Maud was my Grandma Ella May's oldest sister. I'll tell you more about her in a minute. Don't do anything to upset Aunt Maud. She knows everything there is to know about raising kids because she never had any. She told me a whole bunch of things that I was and wasn't supposed to do. We were getting close to my grandma and grandpa's place, and she did what my mom always did that I always hated. She asked Dad for his handkerchief. She spit on it, got it wet, and then she wiped off my face. We got to grandma and grandpa's. It was later Saturday afternoon. My mom and dad visited. They were going to start back early Sunday morning, pack, and then be ready to go on a week with a bunch of hormone-charged seniors for a week in a strange city. Sunday morning, I woke up. My parents were gone. We got dressed. We went to church. My grandma and grandpa attended this small Methodist church that was only a block and a half, 2 blocks away. We walked. We got to the church, and there was Aunt Maud. Aunt Maud was a large, imposing woman. My grandfather was maybe 5'8". Aunt Maud towered above him a couple of inches, especially when she was wearing those Methodist-approved high heels that she often wore. Her clothes were black. My dad said somebody died that she knew years ago and she was still celebrating. There were a lot of buttons on the front of her dress. And she had shoes that had these, they were called hooks and eyes. I thought it would be fascinating to try and work those hooks and eyes. My mom had told me on the way up, Aunt Maud had a bee in her bonnet. And I wanted to make sure and check that out when she took her hat off. Aunt Maud was there at the church. She always sang a solo. Whether the rest of the congregation was singing or not, she had this deep contralto voice that just carried. She was tall, her back was straight, her neck was straight, and she always seemed to look down her nose at people. When church was over, we went back to my grandma and grandpa's. Aunt Maud followed us for Sunday dinner. We sat down to dinner finally, and we had peas. Peas in cream. Oh, I love those peas. We hadn't sat down very long, and Aunt Maud looked at me, and she said, "Young Lawrence." She always called me Young Lawrence. My dad was Lawrence, and I was named after him, so I was Young Lawrence. "Young Lawrence." Now, Aunt Maud had 3 big sins: smoking, drinking, and marrying a Catholic. And she was going to inoculate me early. She said, "Young Lawrence, promise me that you will never smoke." And I thought, well, the only person I knew that, oh, well, I knew several people that smoked, but I thought of Hattie Hoheisel, our neighbor. She was a chain smoker. And when she came over, the house just smelled terrible. No, I wouldn't want to smoke. So I said, "Yes, I promise I won't smoke." She said, "Promise me that you won't drink alcohol." And I thought, well, my dad doesn't drink, and I don't know anybody that does, and it's not that big. Okay, I promise I won't drink alcohol. And she said, "And promise me that you won't marry a Catholic." And my grandma said, "Oh my goodness." I hesitated. You see, my two good friends, Tim and Steve Moss, they had an older sister, Sharon. She was beautiful, and whenever I went over there to play, she was so nice to me, and I figured if my mom didn't marry me when I grew up, I was going to marry Sharon Moss. And I hesitated, and Aunt Maud caught that, and she was like a tiger on the stalk. She said, "Young Lawrence, promise me that you won't marry a Catholic." I hesitated again, and she said, "Do you know the difference between Protestants and Catholics?" And suddenly it came to me, and I did. I said, "Yes, I know the difference. Catholics have outies for belly buttons." That kind of shut Aunt Maud up for the rest of the meal. But she and Grandma went to do the dishes. And after a little bit, I was hungry again, and I went in to get one of those pie crust cookies in the kitchen, and I heard Aunt Maud say, "You know, that boy should be spanked." And my grandma said, "He's just a boy." And she said, "No, he should be spanked. I know how children should be raised." And I said to her, "My mom says that you know everything there is to know about raising children because you never had any." And she turned and looked at me, and I could see kind of a smile on my grandma's, the corners of my grandma's mouth, but she was going like this. She said, "Children should be seen and not heard." And I said, "If they're not heard, how do you know what they're thinking?" My grandma, again, but leave. I went out and I played with my grandfather. We played checkers. Now, my grandfather was a very, very good checker player. But that afternoon, he would get ahead about 8 kings to 1, and somehow I would still win the game. And then we played caroms. I don't know if you're familiar with caroms, little round rigs, red and green. There's an owl. And it's kind of like, well, it's the staunch Methodist approved version of pool. You have a shooter and you try to shoot these caroms into pockets. And we played caroms, and Grandpa would get ahead of me about 10 caroms I had, and he had just one left, and then somehow his aim was off, and he would accidentally start bumping mine into the pockets, and I would win. And we played that afternoon, and then that night, when it got dark, when it got late, he started telling me stories. He even tried to tell me a now papa story. I call them now papa stories because he would start those stories. Grandma here would hear the story he was telling me, and she would say, "Now papa?" And he would have to stop until she couldn't hear anymore. I woke up the next morning, Monday morning, in my bed upstairs. I don't know how I got there. I was looking forward to the whole week with Grandpa, but I hadn't counted on the Wisconsin green bean season. That year was a bumper crop. Oconee Falls had this old cannery, and the cannery was run by steam. Now, my grandfather had been in charge of the steam engines that ran the paper mill until 1930, when they converted to electricity and he was out of a job. But he still knew how to maintain and run steam engines. So whenever it was the canning season, they would call him and he would go in and run the canner. He'd go there early in the morning. He'd get the fires going. He'd get the steam built up. People would come in. It was a great part-time income. Farmers would bring in their green beans. Big gardeners would bring in their green beans. They'd turn them into cans of green beans. But he was gone. And all day, I waited. Finally, I heard it. The Model A coming down the street. My grandfather had bought a 1929 Model A, brand new. He was still driving it, much to the chagrin of my aunts, in 1956. That Model A is now sitting in my shed in Elaria. I'm the second owner. It was handed down to me. But I heard that Model A, and I could hear tuk-a-tuk-a-tuk-a coming down the street. He honked the horn. I ran out. Grandpa, Grandpa, he turned on Washington Street, turned into the garage. I ran out there. We closed the garage door together, walked up to the house, and Grandma was waiting on the porch. He put his arms around her. He gave her a big hug. He said, "Hello, Mater, my little tomato." And she said, "Herb, not in front of the child." She always, that whole week, she waited until after she'd gotten her hug to tell him not in front of the child. We went inside, we ate. And when supper was over, Grandpa said, "Well, let's go out and work in the garden." My grandfather had a garden that could have been the poster child for better homes and gardens. All the rows, arrow straight, the plants just exactly the same length apart. It was picture book. We were ready to go work in the garden. I tramped out into the middle of the garden, and my grandfather said, whoa, wait a minute. I'll tell you what. I'll work in the garden, and you sit here on the side, and I will tell you stories. And I loved those stories. They were stories of my grandfather and his brothers growing up near the Oconto River on a farm. All the different things that happened. He would tell me stories and I would listen, and I woke up the next morning in my bed upstairs, no idea how I'd gotten there. It was Tuesday now. All day I played. Grandma and I did some things. And finally, I heard it. Tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick, coming down the street. I ran outside. Grandpa, he turned onto Washington Avenue, turned, went into the garage. I went out and I helped him close the door. And we walked up to the front porch. He gave Grandma a big hug. Hello, Mater, my little tomato. And she said, Herb, not in front of the child. And we went in to eat supper. Aunt Maud was there. It had taken her a day to recover from Sunday, but she was there. It was Tuesday. We started eating, and Aunt Maud turned to my grandma, and she said, Ella Mae, do you know that so-and-so's daughter is P-R-E-G-N-A-N-T? And I said, I know what that spells. That spells pregnant. And Aunt Maud choked on a pea. I don't know whether it bothered her more that I knew the word or that I said it out loud. I said, pregnant means that you have a baby in your stomach. You know, I'm not supposed to tell you that my mother's pregnant. Aunt Maud and my grandmother both perked up at that. And Aunt Maud said, why not? And I said, because she's not. Well, Aunt Maud was quiet for a little bit, and I took that as a sign that I should keep talking. And I said, you know, my sister is in the 7th grade, and this last year, she learned how you make babies. And she told us, do you want to hear how you make babies? And Aunt Maud was like a deer in the headlights. And I said, it's easy. You just change the Y to I and add ES. It was still too much for Aunt Maud. She was quiet the whole meal. She left. The next day, Thursday, was just like the others. I'd wait all day for my grandpa. Finally, I'd run outside, turn the corner, car in the garage, come up, hug my grandmother, hello, Mater, my little tomato, Herb, not in front of the child, and we'd go in and eat supper. And then after supper, we'd go out to that picture book garden, and Grandpa would work in his garden and tell me stories until I woke up the next morning in my own bed. It's Friday. I woke up in the morning, I said, you know, it's just not fair. My grandfather has to work all day in that hot canner. And then he has to come home, we eat supper, and he has to go out and work in his garden. Maybe if I helped him in his garden during the day, we would have time after supper to go to the Tasty Freeze, which was only about 2 or 3 blocks away. And so I helped my grandma for a little bit. And then I said, Grandma, I'm going to go outside. And I went out to the garden shed. And I got a hoe and I walked out to that garden. And I did not know which were the good plants and which were the weeds, but I figured if I got them all, I'd be sure and get the weeds. And I started working with a fervor. I'd gotten about a row and a half, and Grandma's voice behind me said, what are you doing? I turned around and I said, Grandma, it's just not fair. Grandpa has to work all day in that hot canner. He comes home, and then after supper, we have to come out here and work in the garden. I thought maybe if I helped him in the garden, we'd have time to maybe do something fun, like go to the Tasty Freeze tonight. And she took the hoe from my hands and she said, "Well, I think you've helped him enough." We put the hoe away and I could not wait. I could not wait for my grandfather to get home. And finally, we heard it. Tuk-a-tuk-a-tuk-a-tuk-a-tuk. Arr, arr. I ran outside, pulled in, into the garage, closed the door. And on the way up, I'm holding his hand. I said, "Grandpa, I helped you today." And he said, "Yes, yes, that's wonderful." And we walked up. He took his arms, put them around Grandma, and said, "Hello, Mater, my little tomato." And she said, "Herb, remember, whatever you say to him now, he'll remember for the rest of his life." And she went in the house. And Grandpa turned to me, and he said, "What did you say earlier?" And I took him by the hand, and I pulled him around the back of that house to the garden. I said, "I helped you in the garden today." And he looked, and he went down on one knee so that his other knee was out, and he sat me on it. He said, "Why did you do this?" I said, "Well, Grandpa, it's just not fair. You have to work in that hot canner all day. You work all day. We come home, eat supper. We have to go out and work in the garden. And I thought if I helped you today, maybe we could do something fun like go to the Tasty Freeze." And he said, "Oh." And he gave me a hug that was maybe a little bit tight. But he took my hand and we went walking up to the back door to go in for supper. And there was Aunt Maud. And we walked in the house. Now, my grandfather got awfully quiet when Aunt Maud was around. I don't think he ever said much when she was around. We walked in the house and she said, "Herb?" He said, "Yes." She said, "You saw what that boy did in the garden?" He said, "Yes." She said, "You know what you have to do now?" He said, "I've already done it." She said, "No, you haven't." He said, "Yes, I have. And if you don't agree with what I did, you're not welcome to supper tonight." And Maud got kind of a look on her face like somebody throwing cold water there. She got real quiet. We went in, we ate supper. She never said a word, got up and left immediately afterwards. When she left, my grandfather got up, walked over to my grandmother, put his arms around her and said, "Mater, my little tomato, my grandson helped me in the garden today. So we have time to go to the Tasty Freeze. Would you do us the honor of accompanying us?" And he gave her a little squeeze, and she said, "Herb, not in front of the child." And then she said, "I would be honored to accompany you. Let me do the dishes." He said, "No, let's go now," before the dishes were washed. That may have been a first in my grandma's life, that we went someplace before the dishes were washed. And we walked all the way to the Tasty Freeze. We got there and Joe was working. My dad knew everybody in Ocana Falls. Joe was working. He said, "Joe, my grandson helped me in my garden today so that we could come for a Tasty Freeze tonight." And when people came up, customers that my grandfather knew, he told them how I had helped them in his garden. When we walked home that night, I had my hand in my grandfather's hand, and I'm not sure that my feet ever touched the ground. Now, it would be years before I ever realized what I had really done in that garden. And it would be even more years before I heard the passage from 1 Corinthians that said, "Love is patient. Love is kind. It's not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. Love does not exist, does not insist on its own way. It's not irritable or resentful. Love does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. And now these three abide: faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. When I heard that passage, I did not need that passage explained to me. My grandfather had shown it to me. Now, I said earlier, Jesus' stories have come down to us in frameworks. Much of the details have dropped away. And as I thought about this story, I said, what if this story were told 2,000 years ago, repeated and repeated, and then finally written down by somebody who thought it was important? How would it come to us now? And this is how I think it would come to us. Once there was a grandson who wanted to help his grandfather in the garden, but not knowing which were the good plants and which were the weeds, he killed everything. When his grandfather had saw what he had done, he called the grandson and asked him, "Why did you do this?" The grandson said, "I did it, grandfather, because I love you." And the grandfather replied, "Grandson, I love you too." The word of the Lord for the people of God. Amen.